Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Are the Lakers going to be in the Kyrie Irving business this summer? Are they prepared to run it back, Andy? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Getting close to 14,000 subscribers on that thing. Really appreciate all of the interaction that you guys have with each other, that you have with us. We'll be reading some of your comments, actually, regarding yesterday's show in just a moment here. Do want to remind people that you make Locked On, another Locked On podcast, your second listen of every day, but of course only making after making us your first. I do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. So we'll get to this Kyrie Irving versus run it back question. Some fresh reporting on that from our friend Jovan Buha at The Athletic. But first, Andy, reaction. We spent a lot of time after Wednesday's loss talking about Darvin Ham and potential mistakes that he made, potential mistakes that Rob Pelinka might have made by not providing Darvin with a tall human to play in this game with Anthony Davis out and Mo Bamba injured. And man alive, people on the YouTube channel reacted.
Yeah, here's one exchange that I thought was actually quite amusing just because it talked about beyond the specifics of what Darvin Ham may have done wrong, what Rob Pelinka may have done wrong, just the Lakers' inability / seeming unwillingness to just take the opportunity in front of them. From Esther Lee, one more note, the refs were trying to give us this game, and we said, nope, it was ridiculously biased towards us, and we still lost. The other fishing channel responded, I was waiting for someone to mention this. Refs tried so hard to help the Lakers all the way down to the very end with 0.3 seconds left in the game. Esther Lee, I've never seen the refs help an away team as much as I saw from this game. The refs were our MVP in terms of keeping us in the game the first half in the Schroeder free throw parade. This other guy chimed in. Rockets did all they could help, too. They had dumb penalties and numerous shot clock mistakes and turnovers. You know, Brian, with so much to get upset about in yesterday's game, we really didn't even just get into all the different ways that everybody involved seemed to be saying, seriously, no bleep, Lakers. We're handing this thing to you. Take it. Yeah. Take it.
I mean, I might have been too focused on the all the missed shots and missed opportunities to, and the parade, the red carpet to the rim that the Lakers laid out for the Rockets.
As the Rockets are pointing out, they returned the favor. It was just a different type of parade.
It was so obvious, like what the opportunities that were there for the Lakers, because that last point about the Rockets like throwing the ball out of bounds and having shot clock violations, like the Rockets didn't do stuff like suddenly morph into the, you know, an 80s version of the Showtime Lakers or, you know, those great Celtics teams or whatever. They rocketed for a lot of that game. And yet the Lakers just weren't good enough to take advantage of it. But I will say this, Andy, what I like about that and I appreciate about those comments is they do reinforce something that you and I have always claimed, which is for anybody who thinks that the league is biased against the Lakers, that they are trying to somehow prevent the Lakers from succeeding or whatever it might be, that is just absolutely objectively not true. If there is a fix, it is always going to be in favor of the Lakers because the league wants the Lakers to be good.
Next set of comments, Schmidtke Originals. For sure they got overpowered. At least Ham needs to recognize Wenyen should mirror Şengün's minutes. If you're worried about shooting, addressing something you brought up yesterday and trying to theorize why Darvin Ham opted for Rui over the conventional, and I think far better choice of Wenyen Gabriel, let Rui start for Vanderbilt and bring his energy off the bench. Ham has no plans. From Roar Noah Zuri, I don't know if the coaching staff and Ham really know the strengths and weaknesses of their player. Are they really watching tape? Like, come on, man. It's your job to play them at their strengths and put them in a lineup that complements their skills. From Mr. Matsuda, I'm not a Ham hater. I think he's doing his best, but he got too cute tonight. And then I thought this was a great comment from a frequent commenter, Socrates Thalalosis. I credit Ham for getting buy-in from players and getting them to play hard. I credit Ham for doing a great job with Russell Westbrook to the point where his value was rebuilt and we could make a good trade. I also credit Ham with coaching mistakes and failures to make adjustments that cost 5 or 6 games and with overplaying AD and LeBron into injuries. I don't necessarily agree with the last part about overplaying them into injuries, but otherwise, I think this is actually from Socrates a really good assessment of what has made Ham promising for the future, but uncertain for the present.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, you sit there and you think about it for, you know, a few more hours, you sleep on it, whatever. I still would have started Wenyen Gabriel. I think the idea, you know, it's very easy to be like, well, if they just started Wenyen, they'd have been up by 10. And, you know, you can play this out in any number of ways that aren't necessarily true. It's not what, you know, there's no way to know whether the right front court was Wenyen and Vanderbilt with, you know, the three guys in the backcourt, where there was, as some people have suggested, Wenyen at the center, bring Vanderbilt off the bench or whatever. There's, you know, there are a bunch of, but it's, I really would love to know a little bit more about the logic there, just because it's one of these things, and we've talked about it, where the Lakers have such a small margin for error, particularly when Anthony Davis isn't available, that, you know, these decisions that are 2% decisions, 5% decisions, and this one maybe is an 8 or 9 or 10% decision. I don't know. It doesn't matter necessarily. Like, those are amplified, and it is natural and expected that, to the point that, you know, Socrates was making, that Darvin was not going to be pitch perfect on these in his first season. So like you say, good, promising potential coach for the future, but you have to go into this season expecting growing pains for this year.
Yeah. And then this was a really interesting comment from Noel Lastry. The front office has shown themselves to be cheap, rumored to want to avoid repeater tax. It's cost us Caruso. Now it costs us a game against the Rockets. AD is the only real big. He can't play back-to-backs. He's injury prone. If AD goes down, are you prepared to play Gabriel for the rest of the damn season? Never imagined that the Lakers as a cheap organization, but here we are. I can't for sure, Brian, whether or not cost was the reason that they did not bring in somebody essentially on a 10-day deal for one game. But I will say this. This is a real narrative with the Lakers right now and a real perception, and it doesn't come from nowhere. And it's a problem from a PR sense with this team.
Well, yeah. And yeah, they're a tax team, you know, a 10-day guy, whatever they are in the luxury, you multiply it by 3, whatever. It's still such a small amount. I think essentially they just said, you know, maybe it's penny pinching when you put these two things together. It's like, why are we going to, we don't want to bring in and take up a roster spot, do all these things for somebody who's not going to play. Or maybe they thought they would just get by for a game. And like you say, if Anthony Davis gets hurt, none of this matters. Like they're not going to the playoffs, and, you know, so all that kind of stuff. You don't need to, there's no backup big you can sign as Anthony Davis insurance. What you really need is Wenyen Gabriel insurance, Mo Bamba insurance. Like, so you, part of what was helpful for Darvin was this notion that you had flexibility in your roster. You had different skill sets that you could deploy at different times. Wenyen is a better defender than Rui Hachimura. He is a better rebounder. He is a better rim protector. But he is those things mostly because Hachimura is bad at them, not because Wenyen works as hard as he can, but he's an undersized 6'9 center. There is a limit. And we saw that play where the challenge that the Lakers made, it was a good challenge by Darvin, where Wenyen went vertical, straight up vertical, and took the impact, I believe it was from Green, and the impact knocked him into the third row. Like, that, Wenyen, that's because he's not a big... It seems to me to be malpractice to not have somebody else on the roster when you knew that this was going to be a day he sat out. You know, the Lakers have a really big payroll. It's not that they won't spend on their payroll, but they didn't seem willing to bring in somebody for whatever reason here. We'll talk a little bit more about this after the break and then obviously get into some of this news about Kyrie Irving and the Lakers and whether or not this group will be transformed in pursuit of a free agent, or whether or not they're going to, in our friend Sean McVay's words and on our friend Harrison Fagan's words, run it back. That's next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Nissan, and Nissan's most electric player of the week is brought to you by the all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya, and the award goes to, for the second consecutive week, Anthony Davis. And AD did not really need to take the blame for Sunday's loss against the Knicks. He had 17, 16, and 4, but he recognized he needed to become more electric the following game versus New Orleans, and whoa, 35 points, 17 rebounds, 14 points in the first 5 minutes, making it look easy with back-to-back left-handed baskets, smooth and elegant with that jumper, but also power and strength around the rim. That ferocity, you think it was missed against Houston? The 2023 Nissan Ariya packs pin-you-to-your-seat power and premium intelligence all in one EV. The all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya, the EV for people who love to drive. Shop at NissanUSA.com.
Last word on this. Last word on this today. I have a feeling we'll come back to it a few times before, say, next season. I mean, obviously where the Lakers finish is going to have a big impact on how people view Darvin and the work that he did. You know, if the Lakers, what is it, 12 games left? Yeah, if they'll, you know, coming, you know, into tonight's game against Dallas, which, by the way, is just huge.
I mean, for people who are unaware, right now, the standings as we record, they are a game behind Dallas. The Lakers are the 10 seed. Dallas is the 8 seed. They need to pass Dallas. Not just, you know, they need to win this game because they need to win this game, but they need to win this game to pass Dallas as far as like standing shakeouts, because a tiebreaker, you know, if say they tied up the series, from there it goes to best Western Conference record, and Dallas smokes the Lakers. Like, it's not even close. So if they're going to get a higher seed than Dallas, it means they have to use Darvin's parlance, stack wins. Mm. And it's not just to have a tiebreaker, tie them in the standings, anything like that. They simply have to win.
So, you know, let's say, I think the Lakers have won 8 of their last 12. So they've played well. Let's say, you know, you have 12 games left. Let's say you win 7 or 8 of them. You know, I mean, 8 would be ideal. You go 8-4, you know, 8-4 again, but that's, you know, not necessarily, you know, that's a pretty good record. You win 2/3 of your games. Let's say over the last, you know, X amount of games, they go 15-9, something like that, over the last 24 games. That's a pretty good record. You do that over the course of a season. If Lakers have gone 15-9 all year, pace to 82 games, we would not be having the same conversations that we're having now. We'd be talking about, are they going to be a 3 seed, a 4 seed, 2 seed, whatever it might be. You know, so if they finish strong, I do wonder how that will impact people's perception of Darvin, whether it will improve. Well, you know, because again, I made the point the other day, following Sunday's game, that when people get frustrated with the coach, they tend to blame the coach for choices that cause them to lose, but not give them much credit for improvement. This season has been really frustrating, and the turnaround has been enjoyable, but also frustrating, because it's like, it's still not, they're still not at 500. It's not like there's this tangible achievement that's been had. And you know, I wonder how much credit he'll get if they turn it around. I wonder how much credit he deserves if they turn. He should turn it around some. It's a better team. It's a better roster. It's an easier roster to coach. And so any decent coach, you would think, would get better results with this group than the group that came before. I just don't know how that's going to shake out, because there's so much sort of stuff and context and baggage around the Lakers and the franchise. But I'll tell you this. 8-4 would go a long way to making everybody feel better about Darvin going into next year. I think.
I mean, here's the thing. If they finish strong and they manage to get into the playoffs, maybe win a round, at some point, I think the pressure ends up off Darvin, just because I think most Laker fans began this season not expecting much more than getting into the playoffs, getting around, because that was the roster that they thought they had. And then once we reached this period where they legitimately had a better roster, A, there wasn't much time. B, you went most of it without LeBron. C, you've gone off and on without Anthony Davis. And, you know, a little bit without D'Lo. Like, there is only so much to reasonably expect. I mean, forget Darvin being a first-year coach. Like, experienced coaches could have difficulty with the circumstances that the Lakers have been dealing with all season.
Ty Lue has basically been a 500 coach all year long and lost five straight when Russell Westbrook joined his team.
Right. And it seems like they've started to figure out the Clippers, how to navigate, you know, the new look with Westbrook. Like, they're starting to play better. You know, Lue, even with the Westbrook question and all of this and those complications, was dealing with a stronger roster and more continuity. So, and I think Ty Lue is one of the best coaches in the league. So that also helps his case, you know, and in a lot of ways too. I think where fans may really make their ultimate evaluation of Ham is next season, with kind of like a clean slate. Like, you're gonna begin this season, you know, I don't know exactly what the roster is going to look like, but I can promise you it won't include Russell Westbrook. And I don't say that to pile on Russ. I'm saying he was the biggest complication on last year's roster, or this last year and this year. Whether you're talking about implementing Russ himself or whether you're talking about the complications with $47 million on one player who doesn't fit. Next year, it is almost impossible for them to come up with a roster that offers more inherent obstacles. And I think that is
because even if we'll get to this in a second, even if they blow it up and go all out for Kyrie Irving, Kyrie fits better than Russ.
Yes, exactly. Like, Kyrie is in certain respects a better version of D'Angelo Russell on the court and a far worse version off the court and often in the locker room and culturally and blah, blah, blah. But to your point, Kyrie is not a fit issue. It's basically the only place he's not an issue. but let's be fair about this. Kyrie is a good fit with those.
Oh, teams. He's a tremendous player. I mean, what's funny to me about this is, like, the for a lot of this season, there was real focus on Darvin's choices because the team was so bad that, you know, they needed him to kind of be perfect to elevate and squeeze whatever juice was available from this group to have a chance. But ultimately, I think that's not fair because it is, you know, button pushing on with rosters that are incredibly imperfect and very poorly constructed is it's almost impossible because it's like being asked to solve a puzzle, you know, a jigsaw puzzle, but you're only allowed to see half the pieces, you know, like you're not allowed to turn over everything, or you can't look at the box to see what the picture is supposed to look like. And I think to a large degree,
or you can like, just okay, see that they're the wrong pieces. It's like,
you have no idea.
They're puzzle pieces from a different puzzle.
Right. It's like, you just don't have good enough visibility into what you're doing to be able to formulate opinions. So you can react, and we do, and I'm sure they try. Everybody's trying to figure out what the right answer is, but a lot of ways there aren't right answers because the ingredients are so imperfect. And so, you know, the Lakers needed him, you know, kind of to be perfect because everything else was so imperfect to get what they possibly could out of it. And he obviously wasn't. And there, we've talked all throughout the year about things that we haven't quite understood. The difference now is they have more wiggle room for coaching decisions that aren't perfect. You know, Mike Budenholzer makes imperfect roster choices or, you know, lineup choices or whatever. The Bucks are so good, you don't always notice, you know. Now the leverage isn't so much that the Lakers don't have a little bit more flex in their roster for mistakes. It's that they don't have any flex in the schedule for anything that, you know, might cost them 5 points in a game, 7 points in a game or whatever. Wednesday's loss to me was one where you look at it and you go back to saying, like, it's a roster thing. It's some choices they made or whatever. But, like, this was – it's a roster that should have won the game, but Beasley was 6 of 17, I believe. Russell was 5 of 17 in that game. Like, the players on the floor also needed to perform better. And if three or four more three-pointers go down, we don't spend nearly as much time examining why Rui started instead of Wenya. It's really fascinating to me the way the arc of the Lakers season has changed and how that impacts the obligation and the job that Darvin is doing, and yet still ends up in a place where he can't make mistakes. You know, it's an interesting flow to me.
Look, if LeBron was available or if Anthony Davis was cleared to play in every game moving forward, you know, your margin increases. And, you know, this was a team that I know that they entered this season not looking to punt it. They were looking to compete. But they also, I think, saw Darvin Ham as a long-term hire and more than about this season. And look, had the Western Conference not been so unusually tight and cooperative, we'd be talking about this season a lot differently.
I believe the word you're looking for is mediocre.
Sure. But the season would already be over.
Yes.
Like under normal circumstances, this season would be, for all intents and purposes, over. It's only the singularity of it that that makes these questions about Darvin's ability to adjust on the fly, you know, coach damn near perfect, so important right now, because under normal circumstances, they wouldn't have an opportunity for it to matter.
Yeah. I will say this, about Darvin and the inexperience and how much they factor that in. There were not a whole lot of veteran coaches out there on the market this offseason that I was particularly excited about. So, I mean, I know both of us were interested in hiring Darvin. All right, let's talk about what kind of team Darvin's going to have next year. Is it going to be a Kyrie Irving-led crew or what we're looking at now? That's next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetterHelp, and life, unfortunately, does not come with a user manual, and when it's not working, it is normal to feel stuck. And navigating life's challenges, whether professional, personal, emotional, it can bring on anxiety or uncertainty, whether you're talking about a career change, new relationship, becoming a parent. And I know from personal experience how much therapy helped me during a really difficult period in my life and for me and my family. And sitting down and talking with a professional was a game changer. And BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists, convenient, accessible anywhere, 100% online, no waiting rooms, no traffic, and it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist, and if things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. So if you want to live a new, more empowered life, therapy can help you get there. Visit betterhelp.com/lockedon today. Get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/lockedon.
A bit of housekeeping. Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, obviously the Lakers playing the Mavericks tonight, were both full participants in Thursday's practice for the Mavs, continuing the long trend of injured players coming back right before they play the Lakers. So there's that. But then again, the Mavericks have not been very good with those two players either. So I would rather play the Mavs without Kyrie and Luka, but just because those guys are there doesn't mean they're automatically going to win. So anyway, our friend Jovan Buha did an interview with Michael Scotto of Hoops Hype, and they got into all kinds of things. And the one that is, I think, most interesting to people, because it impacts really every other question the Lakers would be making this offseason, was around Kyrie Irving and whether or not the Lakers would be making a run at him. And Jovan, who's certainly very plugged in, says that no, they are not. They are planning on running it back. Quote, when I've been told they're not going to be pursuing Kyrie Irving this offseason, to my knowledge and what I've been told, the Kyrie ship, I think, has sailed. You never want to say never. That could easily change. But as of right now, their plan is to run this team back. To that, Andy, I will say hallelujah.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a better approach, assuming that's what it ends up being, than putting all of your eggs in the Kyrie basket, beyond all the waves arms around stuff that comes with Kyrie. We've already seen with Russell Westbrook that example of what depleted depth can do.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
When you have to sacrifice everything for that third star, and you don't already have the foundation built where somehow you can maybe send out players for that third star, but you still have a support system behind your stars. And yes, as we acknowledged earlier, Kyrie Irving is a far better fit than Russell Westbrook, but it doesn't change the structural problems that will become inherent, not to mention the continuity problems that will become inherent if you end up going that route.
You go right back to what they've been doing the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's going to require you not re-signing D'Angelo Russell, not picking up Malik Beasley's option, you know, letting even like Jared Vanderbilt, as inexpensive as he is, letting him walk, not matching offers for Rui Hachimura. Like, it just...
Austin Reeves. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there are ways where you can keep like one of them, something like that, but it's going to be exceptionally difficult. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see why they would do it. I don't understand why they would.
I'm glad, you know, because they're obviously, I'm not a Kyrie fan. I don't like the Kyrie experience. I don't think it's going to improve over time, particularly as he gets, you know, a little older, body starts to break down a little bit more, you know, whatever it might be. It's just that's not where I want to put my money if I'm a really any franchise. But it's less, I would feel the same about virtually any star in the NBA. You want to tell me the Lakers can have Nikola Jokic next year, or they can have Giannis next year. Okay, I'm willing to make an exception. Shea, you know, you put Shea on. Okay, I'm willing to make an exception for three or four or five players around the league. But generally speaking, this idea of you have to find a star to put around LeBron and AD, and you sacrifice everything to do it. The answer to me is no. It's no for Kyrie. It's no for Bradley Beal. It's really no for Bradley Beal. It's no for everybody who isn't in that top tier of guys, or who's like 20, 23, you know, 24 years old.
Well, you're basically like just signing your next face, regardless of how it works out.
Right. And you know, Jason Tatum's available. Okay, fine. Jason Tatum.
Right.
You know, who is, you know, arguably a top five, top six guy now, but you know, I think people understand what I'm getting at. But, you know, and he goes on to talk about, you know, Jovan and Michael Scott. And we'll, I think we've tweeted this out. If we haven't, we will. At Cam Brothers, about the other guys. Like, when you say run it back, okay, well, that means Rui Hachimura. What does that look like? Okay, maybe like, you know, 10 or 11 million or 8 or 9, 10 million, whatever it might be for somebody like him. You know, D'Angelo Russell wanting to come back, the Lakers being interested in him. And, you know, picking up the option on Jared Vanderbilt, figuring out a way to pay for Austin Reeves before somebody else makes it difficult for you, not getting cute, not screwing around, kind of like they did with Alex Caruso. And what I like about it in the end is, like, not only are you left with a roster that at least shown in a small sample size, they can be pretty competitive and fit together pretty well, but also it's like you have a real roster from the beginning, the low paid guys that runs up through the high paid guys, and the ability to tweak it a little bit with exceptions here, which they might use to re-sign their own dudes or bring in someone else. And you got a couple veterans minimums, and you might be able to attract some decent ones because this could be a competitive team. It's so much better. It is so much better that they'd even entertain the idea of going another way is beyond me.
I mean, you would have options in terms of making other trades because you would have a bunch of different contracts at different salary points that could be traded out individually. They could be combined together. The players that we're talking about are all players that would have some degree of interest around the league. You know, it would just give you far more optionality. I actually think it would safeguard you better for what has become just the inevitable LeBron and AD injuries than that third star, unless you're talking about a third star that tends to be pretty bulletproof when it comes to injuries.
Because is good enough to carry a team. And by the way, Kyrie is not, I mean, and this is not a criticism of Kyrie. Most stars can't carry, you know, a subpar roster. But Kyrie Irving and a bunch of, you know, a mid-level exception and a bunch of veterans, minimum guys, is not going to be a good enough team for Kyrie to carry. And that would be true of basically every player in the NBA.
No, I mean, the experience that we saw when we covered the 2006 Lakers, Kobe averaged 35 points per game. In retrospect, should have won MVP. He had an absolutely incredible season, and he had to bust his ass to carry a team that, other than Lamar Odom, had no real upper-end NBA talent at all, to get them to a 7 seed. And that was peak Kobe. Peak Kobe. And peak Kyrie has never been close to as good as peak Kobe. So, like, it's simply not going to happen. That's too much. Regardless of everything else that comes with Kyrie and whether you think that is worth the hassle or not, consider Brian and I both in the not camp, that's too much to put on Kyrie, period. It's too much to put on just about every star anybody in the league.
And, you know, so, you know, you and plus two, like, Russell isn't, somebody asked me this question, I think it was on Twitter, about Russell. Is he like kind of a role guy or an all-star? I'm like, you know, well, I mean, he's been an all-star before, but I don't think he's one of these. He's not good enough to be somebody you'd put in like the perennial all-star category. No. He's not that good.
No.
But you got to be pretty good to make one all-star team. Making all-star, ask Mike Conley how hard it is to make an all-star team. You know, Drew Holiday went, what, like 9 years between, and he's really good. Yeah. So, you know, not making an all-star team is not necessarily, you know, the cutoff here, but he's all-star adjacent most years. And so, you know, he's not a third star, but he's a third frontline player who's pretty reliable. And if you give me that plus three or four other established good players that, oh, by the way, provide your roster with flexibility, it's just what they've shown. The model for that is so much better. Quick note, and, you know, maybe we'll get into this a little bit more next week. Reports from Adrian Wojnarowski that Lonzo Ball might end up missing next year too. Which obviously puts his entire career in jeopardy, which just sucks.
Yeah, I mean, he may end up having a surgery that the hope is this surgery could ultimately extend and really preserve his career, but it would cost him in the immediate next season. It just sucks to watch, man. Like, Lonzo, when he's right, is a really fun player to watch. I think he's also somebody that other players enjoy playing with.
No question. Yeah.
So, and it just sucks.
It reminded me too, like, as we have these debates, and I saw a lot of people, you know, Anthony Davis should have overruled me. You got to play this, that, whatever the Lakers made. No, this is these guys are, I mean, look, you can, some guys have more pain tolerance. Some guys are more willing to risk than others, whatever, but
some guys' bodies just react better.
That's the thing. And this, what these guys are doing is stuff that the human body is not really designed to do. And, you know, the strains and the stresses, when you start to pile these things up, if you snap things, if you crack things, if you break things down, they don't come back in the same way. And certain guys just aren't, you know, physiologically blessed in the way that, like, LeBron was for so many years, Kobe was for so many years. It's just genetic luck in a lot of ways too.
Yep.
And, you know, Brandon Roy didn't win that lottery. Lonzo Ball didn't win that lottery. So lay off guys when the doctors say it is dangerous for them and risky for them to play on the second night of a back-to-back. Take them for their word.
I mean, all things being equal, AD probably shouldn't be playing at all right now.
I have no idea. I mean, I think it's probably safe for him to play.
There's a difference.
There are limits.
I was going to say, and then we'll go here. There's a difference between safe and ideal.
It's definitely not ideal, but I think it's safe. I think it is, sure. You know, and I don't think they'd be playing if it wasn't, everybody was putting his career at risk. I don't think he'd be playing, but there are clearly limits to that and things you have to do in order to keep it at that level. So you're not risking a guy's career. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. It's where you can go to see the show and participate and have your comments periodically read on the big podcast. So we'll see everybody after Friday's game.